Blog Talk Radio.
My time, it's 3:30 p.m. It's still freaking cold here in New York. I'll tell you, we had such a blizzard. I'm sure the whole nation must have heard about this one and our dear, wonderful Mayor Bloomberg, well, trying to do his best to not take responsibility for the fact that you can't get on all the roads, on the streets here. Not all of the streets are cleaned up yet. As a matter of fact, yes, the post office with their code, nor rain, nor snow, nor hail, and whatever, well, it did keep them because they couldn't get the trucks from the main postal zone to the local post office. And I finally got some mail today. Anyway, to get away from this, on the show today. Well, I got a great show today. I was in Texas, where I would love to be right now, I'll tell you. I was in Waco and I was in McAllen, but we're going to focus on the area around McAllen, Texas. It's the town of or city of Mission. Yes, it's my mission to talk about Mission today. And which is, by the way, McAllen is close to the border of Mexico. And so what we're going to talk about is a lot of nature stuff down there. And also a little farther up in McAllen, there's another. So we have in around the Mission area, we're going to be talking about the Butterfly Park, World Birding Center, and also later on up in close to in McAllen, there's the Quinta Mazatlan, which is a historic home and nature center there. So before I'm going to have the Chamber of Commerce and Mission is gathering at the telephone with a few people to talk, but I, of course, I have to have a word from my sponsor first. So go ahead, guys. Drew.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
Yeah, you can get these wonderful brownies on www.brownies.com, and they're also making cookies. There's a double chocolate cookie that they have, and there's another one. It's a pecan caramel, which, of course, I don't care about because it's not chocolate. But anyway, so are you guys at the Mission Chamber of Commerce, are you drooling yet?
Almost. We're getting there. Yeah, we're trying to distract ourselves looking at the beautiful blue sunny sky out here.
Yeah, screw you.
Hey, it's only 85 degrees down here, so it's kind of fresh.
85?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow, and for me, then I don't know if I want to be there. Now that's too hot.
Oh no, it's perfectly pleasant. There's a nice little breeze, and we're looking at the beautiful blue skies. There's birds twirling around. It's a very very pleasant December day here.
Do you get the humidity?
Actually, today it's a little bit better. It rained a couple of days ago. We had some rain, but it's okay. It's actually very pleasant today.
Oh, okay. No, I'm just curious. Like, when you get heat, do you also get the humidity over there?
Yeah, usually yes.
Oh, okay. So it's
but
no
we always
better.
Have constant wind, so it's quite bearable. I mean, we usually.
Oh,
the wind.
All right. All right. I'll be back then.
Yeah, no, it's worth it. It's worth it.
So first, let's get into the particular area of mission.
Mm-hmm.
Tell my listeners what's in mission and where it's located in regards to McAllen.
All right, good deal. Well, Mission is a beautiful, very well-established community with high quality of life on the southern tip of Texas. We are neighbors to McAllen on the west. We are about 8 miles or so north of the U.S.-Mexico border, depending which part of Mission you are to see which one's closer. Parts of the city actually border right on the river. We have great quality of life. We have lots of beautiful residential areas here, and we also have beautiful wildlife and nature tourism destinations in the community that attract winter visitors every year to come down here to spend their winters in a warmer climate, just like you probably would like to at this point in time. And also, we attract visitors throughout the year that want to come here and experience all the beauty that we have down here.
Well, that sounds great. By the way, did we introduce you? We didn't introduce you, did we?
No, not yet.
So you better introduce yourself.
Sure, my name is Matt. I have the great honor and privilege of being the president at the Chamber of Commerce here in Mission.
And did you even say your name?
Matt. Oh, the last name is Oroshchak. I really don't use that one much, but I just go by Matt.
Okay. This way they don't think I have some phantom person.
Absolutely not.
That you have a name and things like that, that you're not just set up to call in. What would you say are the highlights of Mission? What do people?
Well, there's several. What our claim to fame is that we are one of the hotbeds for the citrus industry for the United States. One-third of all the fresh grapefruit sold in the U.S. comes from this community and its surrounding areas. So we have a very big citrus background here. From a nature tourism point of view, our claim to fame is our two key assets that we have here in the community, which is the World Birding Center, the Benson State Park, that we have in the community, as well as the Nava Butterfly Park that is here. And actually, I have representatives from both organizations here to talk a little bit more about their facilities.
And I understand you have the famous Los Abenos ferry.
The which one?
The ferry. The famous ferry.
Oh, the Los Abenos ferry. Yes, Los Abenos ferry.
Yeah, you guys really made it up.
We did get to see it, I know, but it's actually really there. We have pictures. The Los Abenos Ferry is in a neighboring community, and it is the only hand-drawn ferry left on the U.S.-Mexico border that is in regular operation as long as the river is passable.
And when I was there, it wasn't passable. Is that what the problem was?
The river here is regulated by dams, so they try to maintain a steady water level, but since we had recent rains, they had to release more water, which made the river rise to a point where the ferry couldn't cross anymore.
Aha. Which also sort of affected, was it the World Birding Center?
Well, that was a flooding that we had here, 6 months ago now. Just about 6 months ago, where we had a hurricane hit northern Mexico, southern Texas, and it brought so much water to this area that actually parts of the World Birding Center flooded. The Rio Grande here usually is around 300 feet wide or so, its natural flow. And it grew in some areas up to a mile and a half or a little bit more than that. And it flooded some of our parkland that lines the border.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the World Birding Center. Who's the representative that you have there? Let's get the introduction.
My name is Melissa Tadwig, and I'm the Park Tour Manager at the Benson Rio Grande Valley State Park World Birding Center.
Okay, so it was pretty big.
Yes, we're about 700 acres, and we have a lot of nature trails. It's mainly what we do is a lot of nature trails. We do have primitive camping there, and this year we had a lot of the river in the park. So we are still kind of recovering from that, but we do have a lot of the park open now, and hopefully by the end of January we'll continue to be back in full operation.
Well, in terms of the birds, like, how many birds?
The birds, yes, we do see several hundred species of birds do come through, actually, this whole area here. We'll see over 300. We're actually, last year we had a first U.S. record of bare-throated tiger heron. So we see a lot of unique specialty birds that are only found here in the valley or that sometimes venture over from Mexico.
Do you think that possibly any of the birds, like, go into the woods and disguise themselves so people can think they're a different kind of bird?
There's been some conspiracy theories on that, but no. No, actually, we do get a lot of specialties. We're just in a very unique area. The whole valley is just known for its excellent birding opportunities. We see people from actually all over the world that come down to the valley to experience the birding. And we're also known for butterflies and dragonflies. Again, we have a lot of first U.S. records in this area for both butterflies and dragonflies.
So in terms of, like, do people, like, spend, like, I imagine, like, can spend, like, hours or
hours,
whole day there?
Usually it's like, you know, a week or two. People will come and bird the valley. If we have a specialty bird being spotted at our park, they'll try to narrow down the time and be there every day until they're able to see it. We're seeing that right now. We've got a black vented oriole that's been frequenting the park, and he's got kind of a regular schedule. If you're there when he's there, he'll usually make a showing, but, you know, you just have to be patient. It's kind of a little bit more challenging than fishing, so you do have to be patient and quiet and keep watching.
Are there certain birds that you'll commonly see?
Yes, you can on a regular basis. We've got just a host of specialties, but the green jays, the plain chachalacas, Altamira oriole, great kiskadee. We've also been known for the elf owl, ferruginous pygmy owls, specialty hawks. We've got the gray hawk, also the hook-billed kite. These are more regular type birds that we typically see during peak season, which would be now. And you can pretty much come out any day and see these birds visit.
Can you give a little, like, description of some of these birds, like, that are, like, indigenous to there? Like, you know, I mean, here I'll see, in New York City, I'll probably see, well, of course, lots of sparrows. And I'll see, I'll see blue jays, cardinals. You've named some birds, like, you know, my whole audience is going, what the hell is she talking about? What kind of bird is that? What does it look like?
Well,
you know, I hear them all.
They're
in the background in my head. They're all talking to me.
Okay. Typically, you've got your blue jays up there, and we occasionally will see a blue jay in the area, but it's very rare. We have a green jay, and he's just this gorgeous, brilliant bird. He's got this really pretty indigo blue head. Greenish wings, yellowish body. He's just very bright. You definitely don't see anything like that outside of this area, so we definitely have a unique bird there. Our great Kiskadee, it's a large bird. It's got yellow on the breast, a black and white head, and it's brownish wings. It's a loud, noisy bird, and its yellow is just very striking. Another thing that we see a lot of are the buff-bellied hummingbirds, and they're huge. You all may see probably the ruby-throated hummingbirds up there. This is almost double the size of a ruby-throated hummingbird, and it's just this brilliant emerald green. Just they're gorgeous. They're pretty much here year-round unless it gets a little too cold, then they'll move further south. But you can typically see a buff-bellied hummingbird any given day. So
the Altamira Oriole,
I don't know if you got to see that before, but it is the most, I guess, brilliant orange. It's just a beautiful, little bit darker than sherbet orange, gorgeous oriole bird, a lot brighter than probably what you would see up there with your orioles. Does that help
at
all?
What was that big bird? That big bird?
Oh, the plain chachalaca?
Yeah.
Okay. That looks like maybe like an extra large roadrunner. He's all tan, makes a lot of noise, and he's just a very noisy, social bird. I think they may call them like prairie chickens down here or something to that effect. So they're just about everywhere in the wooded areas here.
So I guess people like... they're all coming in there with their binoculars, and somebody screams, or finally yells, should I say, I just saw a certain bird, and everybody gathers and looks to see the bird?
Yes, actually, we witnessed that this morning. There was a spot of yellowish-orange down in our gardens, and they thought it was that black-vented oriole, and they all just dropped everything that they were doing and ran out, you know, as a visitor center to go look for this bird. So, and they'll spend 30, 45 minutes until they give up and go to a different spot. But usually you get these big groups of birders, and they're all just honing in on one area with a chance to see these rare birds.
That must be pretty cool, huh?
Yes, it is. It's quite amazing. So I've only been down in the valley for 2 years, and I'm kind of was a backyard birder and have broadened that. But it is quite amazing what you can see out here just in one day, one morning, on a bird walk. I mean, it's truly a unique experience birding down here.
I understand every once in a while you can spot two rubber chickens, too.
I heard that, too. I missed that, but we look forward to seeing some photos of that.
Yeah, I have it. Matter of fact, I have it on video of these two rubber chickens hanging in a... At a bird feeder.
Do they enjoy our bird seed?
Oh, I think they. Well, I don't. They were actually waiting to befriend some of the birds, and apparently none of the birds wanted to come over.
Oh, okay.
But that's okay. They're friendly anyhow. They weren't upset. They understand. In terms of getting around, is the only way to get around just by foot?
Right now it is by foot or by bike only. As we are able to extend our operations and open up more of the park, we do have a tram service that operates from 8:30 till 4:30 daily. And that usually runs every 30 minutes to an hour, depending on our season and what time of year it is. But we do offer a tram service, and we also do rent bikes. And, again, we'll start renting bikes again once we have more of our operations open.
In terms of the tram service and the bikes, is there a charge?
Yes, there is a charge. It's a $5 daily visit charge per person, and that covers your tram service as well as your park entry fee. That includes everything. We do have annual state park passes available, and they're $60. With those, the cardholder plus five people can get in with those, and that's every day, and there's no additional charge with that after you pay that $60 fee.
Okay, so in other words, basically, once you pay to get into the park, you're not paying extra for the tram?
No, you're not paying any additional for the tram. It's just included in with that
daily fee. Are you paying additional for the bike?
The bikes are additional. It's $5 for 4 hours plus a $10 deposit, which is refundable.
Okay.
And if you wanted to rent it for a full day, it's going to be $8. We also rent tricycles as well, and those run a little bit more.
Okay. Just to get in all that info, now that we got that away. So now you're going around the park, and there are places to stop and hang or eat or anything like that?
Yes, at our visitor center, we do have a cafe, and that's open daily from 8 to 4. We do close from 11 to noon. at the cafe, but the visitor center always has snacks and drinks available. We also have a couple picnic areas available in the park, one at our nature center and then one at a place called Ebony Grove, so there's several picnic tables available. Lots of benches throughout. You can bring in your own lunch. And we also have a meeting room available, too, for $300 a day. And you can have caterers come in and bring food there if you wanted a more formal event.
I don't suppose at the cafe you serve anything like chicken or quail, do you?
Absolutely not. We stick with the local variety of birds down here.
Oh, okay. I see. So, like, in some of the areas, I noticed, like, there was, and I guess that was the area that was cut off at the time, but we managed to sneak into to look around. There was, it was, like, accessible to the river, I guess.
Oh, the boat ramp?
Yeah, and that area, yeah, it's, is that
okay.
Because, so that's the part that was closed off. I guess it's still because of the flood, when it's renovated, to kind of describe what's in that whole area.
Well, that area has been reopened except for access to the boat ramp. That's now been closed off. But there is a large pavilion out there that can be rented as well, and you can have a picnic and barbecue out there. But that area has been reopened except for access to the water. It's probably going to be some time before we can reopen that. So no kayaking or fishing until we're able to do some more extensive repairs to that area. But as far as walking and having a picnic out at the pavilion and visiting the bird blinds in that area, it has been reopened.
Oh, that's really good to know. Yeah, and in terms of the time of year to go, I mean, I get that. I didn't go either the best time of year or the best time of day. Is the time of the year make a difference or the time of day in terms of spotting birds?
You know, it really depends on what you're looking for. Usually mornings are good for birds and the same at dusk, but throughout the day you can see butterflies and dragonflies come out. It's also just a real good time is anywhere from December through about April. And that's probably the best time to visit the park as far as the birding activity, nice weather, and you're sure to see a lot, especially with the winter migrants that are coming through. In October, though, it's typically really good for butterflies, so it just kind of depends on what you want to see. We're full in the summertime with a unique bird called a grooved-billed awny and a lot of other nesting birds, so things that you don't get to see in the wintertime are a lot more abundant in the garden areas in the park. It's just not as many. But, I mean, there's always something going on at the park, and really any time's a good time. But if you're mainly coming after for birding, December to probably April or May is your best time.
Oh, okay. Well, I understand there might be a press trip going down there. And I think it's around that time, so that'll be cool. Maybe I'll get to come back there and see more birds.
I also wanted to let you know we do have a lot of other activities that do go on regularly in
mm-hmm.
our park. We have bird walks, dragonfly walks, creatures of the night that are about once a week, and those will start again in January. That's just a neat time to see what's going on with the different nightlife at our park. We also do a creature feature that, like, right now we're just seeing a lot of different migrants come in, and so they'll kind of hone in more and talk about the latest birds or butterfly, dragonfly activity that we have in the park. And then, of course, just a general Benson nature tour to talk about what's going on at Benson and the history behind it and just things like that, especially with the recent flood. We've done a lot of talking about that, so it's been a real interesting historical time for us.
Well, in terms of when you say the nighttime, other than owls, is there any particular night birds other than owls?
Yeah, we have a common paraki that a lot of people like to see, and that's a unique bird for us in the valley. And we have very specific, unique owls, like the ferruginous pygmy owl and the elf owl that are only seen here in the valley, and they're very commonly seen at our park. There's also armadillos, scorpions, raccoons, and just bobcats, a ton of other mammals and different spiders and stuff that you can see at nighttime that you don't necessarily get the opportunity to see during the day.
Now, before you said, you named a bird before you said the owls. What was that?
It was a paraki.
And what's
that? And
that
is, I don't know if you're familiar with, like, a whippoorwill. It's in that type of family.
Oh, okay.
And he's only found down here. So, and you see them actually along the roadside. And as you're walking through the park, you can usually shine a flashlight on them and they'll fly off. There's also killdeer. That may be more common in your area up there. So they're not quite like a killdeer, but they're a ground bird. You see them at night, and they're just real unique to this area.
Now, what in terms of, I mean, are these birds like used to people being around?
For the most part, yes. I've noticed that we've been having, I guess, a little more timid animals since the park is flooded and we haven't been as active in the park, but they're slowly starting to come back to the feeding areas and they're becoming more tolerant of humans and hanging around, especially the javelina. So that's another southern specialty that we have at our park, which is similar looking to a pig, but not quite in the same family. And y'all may know it as a collared peccary.
I have viewed javelina. I think I was in Arizona, and I was staying in a resort, and they all, it's like a whole bunch came out at night.
You'll see them at night as well.
Yeah, it was quite humorous. One of them happened to be standing there in front of this area that was set up like for Christmas, like looking, and I took a photo, and it looks like a great Christmas card to send, you know, like the javelina family would send a Christmas card. They're creepy little things, but they're cute. But
yeah,
you don't want to get
favorite
too close.
Been, so.
Is something that I had kind of noticed is if this is true, like it, wherever there are birds, there are butterflies.
Yes, that is correct. We had a lot of flora and fauna, and there's actually a gentleman here to speak more about the National Butterfly Center that's probably going to be more of your expert on that.
Yeah, I want to get into that. You could stay, though, because I want to kind of get into, like, in terms of this, like, the butterfly park, what I was wondering, and then while I was at Butterfly Park, I saw birds. And not enough butterflies. So what I was kind of wondering is, in terms of that, would you find the same butterflies in the Butterfly Park that you would find at the World Birding Center?
You see a lot of similar species. I mean, we're going to have some of the same, but the Butterfly Park is unique in that they have different vegetation to attract different butterflies, and they probably see more variety than we do at our park.
Oh, and I have another question. In terms of feeding, it looks like I'm seeing, are they oranges, grapefruit shells? What am I seeing?
Those would be oranges or grapefruit shells, and those are put out for the orioles, and we've got orange-crowned warblers and other birds that will come in and feed on those.
So, in other words, it's something that they feed on, and how did they find that was something that was, as opposed to, you know, putting out bird seed?
Well, there's different types of birds that are attracted to different things. We also put out like a peanut butter suet blend. So fruit will attract certain types that maybe don't eat the bird seed. So this way you get a bigger variety of birds coming to a feeding station by offering the fruit suet, also having fresh water, and then providing bird seed.
Okay, so you have, how much of a staff do you have there that goes out to, because it's a pretty large area that goes out to all the feeders.
It is a huge undertaking to keep everything filled, and we rely heavily on our volunteers, and we get a lot of what we call winter Texans to come down and volunteer and help us maintain the feeders and the feeding areas in the park.
So should I assume it's probably, it takes much longer, like if you have the orange or grapefruit shells, I mean, to be eaten, as opposed to if you're putting down some, like, bird seed or, you know, something else, right?
No, we just, you put out the whole, the fruit, you cut it in half, and then they're able to just put that fruit out, and we put that out maybe once or twice a day. So we are filling up feeders and putting out fruit up a couple times a day during the peak season.
So in other words, you're saying that they're not just the shells, that not just the shells of the grapefruit or orange, you're putting actually something in them as well?
Yes. No, it's the fruit. So it's the whole fruit. We just cut it in half and they eat
the fruit out. Oh, and I'm kind of wondering why they're dining on this, like why they pick the, you know, the shells of the. So in other words, they're used to kind of hold the fruit, or as opposed to that they're eating that.
No, they're eating the fruit. The peanut butter suet goes into a whole other feeder. I don't know if I maybe confused you on that.
Oh, okay. The way it looked to me is like they all seemed to be eating grapefruit shells or orange shells or something, and I'm kind of wondering, why that? But I guess, you know, I guess I didn't come across one that had actually had something in them or noticed that.
Oh, they probably picked it clean. They go through it pretty quickly once that gets put out in the morning. That's
uh-huh.
like during peak season. We'll fill out twice a day, and we'll go put out fresh fruit in the afternoon as well.
So you feed them like twice a day?
Yes, ma'am.
So another once in the morning and once in the afternoon, and then
they starve
in the evening, huh?
No, there's plenty else out there for them to eat on.
Do they ever decide? Well, I'm really hungry. I guess I'll have. I hate bird seed, but listen, did something to eat. Do birds have? In other words, like the birds that just won't eat bird seed or just won't eat fruit?
There's certain birds that are just seed eaters, and they typically just stick with the seed type things. The northern mockingbird, which is our state bird, occasionally I'll see him eating seed, and they, you know, may come accustomed to it. But normally they are not your typical seed eaters, but sometimes they'll pick on the seed as well as fruit and peanut butter suet. So, but usually it's like a species thing. If they've got the bill type to crack open a seed, they stick with the seed. And then same thing with your smaller birds. They're not able to crack open a seed, and they typically go after the fruit or the suet.
Oh, okay. By the way, I just thought, what do owls eat?
Owls mainly go after the smaller rodents or larger insects and crickets and grasshoppers and stuff, and it depends on the species of owl.
Okay, because it occurred to me these are night birds, and I'm thinking like, well, all the food is gone by this time. What do they get to eat? I don't know. I'll ask Esther and Eunice, my rubber chickens, and see what they like.
Okay.
I think they like corn, though.
Probably, yeah.
All right, so let me now get into the butterfly park, and hang there in case something else comes up. And who do we have from the Butterfly Park?
Hi, my name is Max Munoz. I'm the grounds manager in the Butterfly Park.
Okay. So first, give us a description of this park.
Well, the National Butterfly Center is a center dedicated to education, conservation, and scientific research on wild butterflies. And the 100 acres of the National Butterfly Center is the premier location in the United States to experience the beauty, drama, and emotion of the wild butterflies.
Okay, and when you pop in there, it's like you walk in and it's just like butterflies all over the place?
Depending on the season and the weather itself, you should be able to see a lot of butterflies all over the place.
Okay, so in other words, this is a, a, a place where if you want to see the best, the most, or whatever, you would, like, call ahead at some point and say, hey, listen, what's the best time of day, what's the best season or whatever for me to see a lot of butterflies? And what would, you know, what would you tell somebody?
That would be the best way to do it, get in contact with us, and we should be able to, depending on the weather there, or the best times would be even considered in fall and in spring when the weather is just right for the butterflies. There's enough sun for the butterflies to warm up their wings and fly around, and you'll be able to see a lot more.
So, I mean, is there a particular, let's say, time of day that's best to go?
Usually in the morning till around midday, and then in the afternoon a little bit, probably 2 hours into the afternoon.
Okay, so when you say the morning, so in other words, people should come there like at 6 o'clock in the morning or like 10 o'clock in the morning?
As soon as the sunrise comes up, butterflies start warming up their wings, and that's the best time to come out.
Okay, so in other words, let's say if people wanted to see, doing butterflies and birds, that they should go to the butterfly park in the morning and then make their way over to the World Birding Center to see the birds?
That's right. We also have a small section for birding, but not as large as the World Birding Center.
Oh, okay. What kind of are there any, let's say, to get to the question, is there any birds that come to the butterfly park that don't necessarily go to the World Birding Center?
Well, actually, the World Birding Center would have a whole lot more birds than we do. Every once in a while, we'll have a rare bird. And we'll get in contact with them, and a lot of the visitors will come over to take a look at it.
Oh, okay. So in other words, you might get a rare bird coming to your park that might not go to the birding center.
Yes, ma'am.
Which of the two places is closer to the border of Mexico, and does that make a difference?
About the same. We do have a trail that will go right up to the river at our park. So, but we're pretty much about the same as far as, you know, the general vicinity. We're just kind of sit in the same area along the side of a levee, and we're about 2 miles from the river.
So, I mean, in other words, it doesn't really make a difference. Because what you're getting, what both places are getting, are birds from Mexico.
Yeah, we can. They've let's see. This year, I know Nava had like a rufous-backed robin that we never came over to see Benson. It hung out at the feeders over at the Butterfly Center. So, you know, it just kind of depends on where the bird lands, if it's a specialty or rarity. Usually you just see one. It's not like a whole flock coming over or coming up into the area. So they'll if they find a good food source and water source, they'll hang around there till they're ready to move on.
Yeah. By the way, are these birds allowed to take the ferry across? Okay, I do have a sense of humor. Otherwise, I wouldn't be bringing two chickens, two rubber chickens. So now to get to the butterfly park. Now I understand, like, let's say you when you pop in there, there's an area where you can see all which butterflies are there.
Most of the time, butterflies stick to certain areas. Different species stick to different plants. And the whole Butterfly Center is actually dedicated to that, to planting only plants that are either feeding plants or plants that will feed the caterpillars of the butterflies themselves. So each plant will have a different species of butterfly.
Well, I mean, you have – I had noticed there was this thing in an area that had – you could see what all the butterflies, see a picture of the butterflies.
I see. Each section is actually labeled with a picture of a butterfly that you would usually see around that area. And it'll give you some information about what to expect on what type of caterpillars and the eggs and when they usually are around there.
Okay. So, but I understand there was a certain area just that was just for the monarchs?
Yes, we do have a monarch plant bed, which is right in front of our nursery. And those are milkweed plants, and they are the main food source for the monarch butterflies.
So would do any of the other birds, like, I'm sorry, any of the butterflies come over to that plant, eat that, or is it just kind of something that's just indigenous to the monarchs?
Actually, there is another one that's called the queen butterfly and the soldier. Both are related. And those besides the monarchs, are the only ones that will actually feed on the milkweed, I'm sorry.
Okay. By the way, do people ever come in and, like, take and bring in a net?
No nets are allowed there because they're there to experience the actual butterflies and not to try to catch them or keep them or damage them or anything like that.
Oh, okay. That's good. I mean, now how is it with butterflies? Are they, like, get the sense of, you know, that an expectation of people? In other words, can you get close enough to them? I don't mean, like, you know, right in their face, but close enough to them to be able to see their colors, et cetera?
Actually, in this park, they feel very comfortable, so you can actually come very close to them. And there's even a couple that would actually let you touch them, or they can actually fly on you, and they're very, very friendly.
Oh, that's good to know. I mean, I just had this flashback. I was almost about to punch this guy. I was out. I had some property upstate. I was walking along the property. I guess I don't know if someone was showing it to me or whatever. And I'm walking, and there was a butterfly, and the butterfly. I guess, like, you know, I just bent down. And I, you know, took it, and I just, like, put it on my shoulder and just continued to walk. And the guy, I guess he saw that, and knocked the butterfly off of my shoulder. And I was like, what? What are you doing? Is that a bug? You know? But anyway, because it's unusual that you can, like, just go, oh, you know, just put your hand there and pick up the butterfly and just put it on your shoulder and, you know. So I thought, oh, that's nice, you know. But the butterflies will. I mean, do you ever? And also to get. I know that, like, for instance, if I go to I've gone to, like, an aviary, and, like, I went to this place in Long Beach, and they had all these lorikeets. And if you had you were to take this little sort of dish or whatever of, I guess it's a liquid food, and you go, and they'll come over right to you, and they'll come on you and eat right out of your, the dish, it'll go on your hand, your body, whatever. I mean, will any of these birds, like, if you were to hold some kind of something that they would like to eat, will they come over to you?
No, these are wild birds, and they do stay away from you.
Oh, okay. Ah, well, that's too bad. They're such pretty things, too. And the same thing, I guess. What do butterflies eat, anyway? I mean, it's
usually nectar out of flowers and different plants. And we do actually make a butterfly brew ourselves to feed the butterflies and attract them even more. And if you were to apply the brew to a long stick or something that you can actually hold on to, you would be able to get some butterflies on it.
Oh, that's cool. Do you something like that? Sell that, if you want to just see the butterflies and sell that to somebody coming in? Or just somebody
at the moment, we don't do that, but it can be done. We do have the butterfly brew there for anybody who wants to feed put them on the feeders and feed the feeders. And if we comes to it, we can actually do it.
Oh, I think that's pretty cool to do that. So I guess the it's good to in the morning. And I guess I didn't really walk around the whole area, but I guess and also I guess I didn't see a whole lot of butterflies. I guess it was a particular day during the day. It was like, I guess middle of the day is not the time then, right?
No, usually when it's too hot, they tend to go to a shady area, so you will not see them flying around.
Oh, okay. So they like windy cool kind of?
Yes,
or...
windy cool with a bit of sunshine.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll make sure I get there during that time of day. So have I missed anything about either the Butterfly Park or the World Birding Center? Have we missed it saying anything about either?
Well, there's been some rarities this year, and if you would have been here a little bit longer, you probably would have seen some different species of butterflies. We saw what they call a silver emperor, which is a very rare butterfly around here. We saw it this past week, so we've been getting a couple of them.
Okay. I mean, have in terms of information, have we talked? Is there anything that anybody wants to add about either the Butterfly Park or the World Birding Center?
Yes, we have a Facebook website at the for the World Birding Center. It's do a search for Texas Parks and Wildlife, and then on Benson State Park, and you'll be able to find our Facebook page, and that's got the best updates and the latest information on there. And then we also have a web address. It's www.worldbirdingcenter.org. And if you have any questions, feel free to call us at 956-584-9156. And we're there 7 days a week from 8 to 5.
That's great. Okay, and how about the Butterfly Park? Got a phone number? Got a website?
Yes, ma'am. We do have one. It's 956-583-9009. We do have a web page. It's www.nationalbutterflycenter.org. You will be able to find our list of activities for the whole year there.
Great. That's pretty cool. Okay. So now let's get back to the city, or is it the city, or is it the town of Mission?
Yeah, the chamber.
The chamber, yeah. Is that considered a city or a town? How would you call it?
Well, the Mission is a city. We're a little bit about over 70,000 population down here right now.
Oh, okay. Also, we there was a church we saw.
Correct. We have the city of Mission finds its origins in a little chapel called the La Lomita Chapel. Which was an old ranch that was utilized by missionaries who came down to this area over 100 years ago. And they set up a ranch. They built a small chapel called La Lomita, named after the little hill it was sitting on. And that chapel, the Mission, gave the name to the city of Mission in the end and helped spur that growth.
And from what I got, is it usable? Is it open?
Yes,
or is that
the chapel is still there as it was, and actually it is being frequently used by the local Catholic diocese. There is services being held there. Folks have weddings there. There are several festivals throughout the year that are being held on those grounds, and the chapel is a central part of those festivals. So it's a still very actively utilized area. And, you know, make it interesting, that chapel sits right there on the riverbanks as well. I mean, the river is 50 yards away from the edge of the chapel. And that entire area there is also has some other nice little venues that people would like to frequent.
So when we say the river, just so we talk, it's the Rio Grande?
Yeah, it's the Rio Grande River. That's our border to Mexico, our liquid border to Mexico.
Okay, this way, you know, when the people who are listening go, so what river are you talking about?
That's the Rio Grande.
We don't want them to go astray and try to
That's right. We don't want them to get lost.
Map it out and try to figure out what river it is, you know? So,
that's right.
Yeah. And I was there. Was the restaurant that was there or something? What did we?
Correct. Yeah. There's several places there right along the river. One of them, and what they are, they're very popular destinations for locals as well as our tourists that come to the area to kind of come in, relax, eat some very good food, have a beverage, enjoy some live music. And the one we went to visit was the Riverside Club, which has been there for over 20 years. And it's essentially a bar and grill that is a beautiful wood building, natural wood building, that sits right on the edge of the river, right on the riverbank, and allows you to have a great time, enjoy some delicious food, have some refreshing beverages while overlooking the water, watching the sunset, and just having a very, very pleasant time right on the U.S.-Mexico border.
Now, can you take a boat into the water?
Yes, ma'am, you can. Actually, the river is regulated in the following fashion, that citizens of both countries have the right to utilize the entire river for water sports and activities. So you frequently see folks on kayaks or little motorboats, on tubes, kind of going up and down the river and enjoying a beautiful afternoon out there, or beautiful day, actually, out on the river and just having a great time.
So what's preventing them from, like, just sailing to Mexico or whatever?
Well, I guess the law is preventing them, since you have border patrol from both sides, from the Mexican side as well as from the U.S. side, kind of making sure that everybody follows the rules there along the river. So if you're on the U.S., come from the U.S. side, you kayak across and you get drifted by the currents onto the Mexican side, actually what the law requires you to do is to go back to the closest bridge and cross back into the United States through the official entry point. You're not supposed to be, country hopping across the river,
right,
south or north.
By the way, right now I'm taking you because I'm home. See, I get, I get something delivered now while we're doing the radio show.
Excellent. What are you getting?
Of course. So FedEx is right at the door.
I was thinking you got some pizza.
Yeah, look
something.
At that. Oh, it's FedEx. Do I have one or two things? I have two. Oh, it's UPS. Oh, and I'm expecting something from FedEx. Okay. Oh, wait, is this from... just talk amongst yourselves.
All right, yeah, we'll be fine. We'll
Staples?
Be fine. Wait for you.
Okay, Staples says send it back.
They were
supposed to not send it.
Oh,
okay.
Right.
And what's this one? Is that from Staples, too?
No, this is from Birkenstock, from Melissa Silver.
Oh, okay. She's up. Okay, I'll sign that for her. Isn't this fun? I get to, like, people know my whole life here. It's really hysterical, isn't it? I know.
I hope you don't have any stalkers.
Yeah. And by the way, see, I'm on the radio right now. Yeah, I'm doing an internet radio show at the moment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just in case you want to know, like, I'm not talking. This is it's not like a phone conversation. Yeah, and what's your name?
Anthony.
So that's Anthony from UPS is here to deliver
Anthony.
Some stuff. And yeah, so. Okay, so I just signed for it. Okay, Anthony, have a great day. I'm glad you got through. Okie doke. So it wasn't FedEx, which is what I was really waiting for. Okay, that's okay. See,
yeah.
This,
so,
this,
so like,
this,
like we were saying, you know, there's some
yeah.
really neat activities that allow the locals as well as our visitors to come to the area, like to enjoy, specifically along the river. You know, lots of wildlife opportunities, some recreational sports. You know, biking, hiking, running, and your water sports that you have right there on the river. And also a great way to kind of, chill and relax and have a good time at some of the entertainment venues and the restaurants and the bars that are located right on the edge of the river and give a really very, very pleasant atmosphere and enrich our quality of life down here.
Are there places that where you can rent boats or kayaks or whatever? Or is it all bring your own or tough luck?
People come in with their own boats. There is public boat ramps. So there might be, there are several retailers of boats who have rental services. So you can rent from them and bring the boat over and let it in the water. So you can do that. There is a group called Los Caminos del Rio that have been kind of evolving the kayaking concept. So you can come with them to the river, and actually they have courses on how to kayak, and they bring in their boats and everything else, and they guide you around and tour you around up and down the river, which is really neat.
Yeah, how, like, when you, how, let's say, how long is the river?
Oh, I mean, the river overall on the U.S.-Mexico border is several hundreds of miles long, but from our perspective, on the city of Mission, I think we have probably about 10 miles worth of riverfront, more or less, 5 to 10 miles. But the river from our point all the way down to the mouth of the river at the Gulf of Mexico is, give or take, I would say about 80 miles, 80 to 100 miles.
So conceivably, you can, like, can you, like, rent a houseboat or something? I mean, I don't know how long it would take. Like, if somebody said, gee, I want to, like, you know, tour the whole river.
Correct. You know what? Theoretically speaking, that could be possible. The issue that you have is with the level of the water.
The
riverbed is quite uneven in its depth. So you have areas of the river that are quite deep. You have areas of the river that barely reach to your knees when the water is flowing. So I don't know how far you get on that boat before you get stuck. But on a kayak, you could on a good high water day, you could probably make it all the way down to the mouth of the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, okay. So, and if you're doing that, is there, you know, like stops along the way? Is there I mean, would you know, like, oh, this is a particular town, and you could stop there and go into town and things like that, or
not too many,
like,
of the towns are actually right on the river. There's a couple that are, but not too many are right on the river. Now, you do have several wildlife parks that sit along the river. So conceivably, what you could do is you could, you know, pedal down to the next wildlife park, kind of dock right there on the edge of the water, and come up to the visitor center, maybe grab some refreshments and stuff. But most of the cities, if you look at them, they are located a few miles off the edge of the river, except for let's say, I can think of two exceptions right now, which is Hidalgo and Brownsville. But the majority of the cities are a little bit further away from the river. But if you were to do a river cruise between the different wildlife parks, you could probably program some little stops there.
Does anybody set up doing a river cruise? Like, can you...
You know what? So far, nobody. The folks actually from the Riverside Club, they do have a boat, like a pontoon boat, large, that can probably about 40 people or so. And they do kind of cruise up that part of the river. But I think they go maybe about 4 miles one way, 4 miles the other way. And that's about it. They don't do the whole big cruise up and down. But there is some boats that you can essentially kind of like a party boat that you can get and kind of have a nice little short cruise up and down the river.
In other words, so let's say if you got a party boat and did that, they would kind of like, is there a marker or something? Or something that say, don't go here, it's too low or too high or something? Or
there's a few markers in the water that you'll see, kind of that they measure the depth on the side, and you can kind of figure out where it gets to the point where it's quite low. And like I mentioned, some areas do get to the point where you can essentially walk through the river.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds great. I guess probably that's a great place to be, like in the hot weather, huh?
Oh yeah, it's very nice. It's very popular. No, when the weather gets really hot for the locals, what's popular is either going down to the river or cruising east down to South Padre Island and enjoying the beautiful beach that's out there.
Oh, okay. I guess I didn't get to see. Well, I guess next time I'll get to see.
Well, you come
some
for the you want to take a look at that. That's another big attraction for us down here as a region that we look at as a big key asset. South Padre Island is a gorgeous beach, probably about 40, 50 miles worth of pristine beach right on the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, cool. All right. I'll urge them to have me on the next press trip.
Yeah, I recommend it. I do recommend it.
I'll have to see if my chickens are willing to go.
There you go. Hey, you get them some good beach outfits, and I'm sure they'll be more than excited to go.
Yeah, I think so. Well, okay, guys. I think we covered all. Did I miss anything?
I think we're good. You know, if anybody has some questions about the area and is interested in coming down here, feel free to contact the folks at NABA, the folks at the Benson State Park, or feel free to contact us here at the Chamber. You can find us very easily on the web. It's missionchamber.com is the website, missionchamber.com. Also, we're on Facebook. Just look for the Greater Mission Chamber of Commerce. You'll find our Facebook with a lot of information. Or if you prefer to talk into a live person, you can call us at 956-585-2727. 956-585-2727.
So if you can talk to a live person
versus just typing stuff into the computer, a dead person. But we'll be more than glad to help you with any questions that you might have. And if you're looking to get some maps and some information about the area and some, or looking for additional contacts if you didn't catch them from the folks from NABA or Benson, we'll be more than glad to be of assistance and point you in the right direction.
Okay. So what I'm saying is that you can talk to a live person versus a dead person.
I haven't seen too many talkative dead people yet, but I wouldn't be surprised to find some of those one day.
Unless they all collect paychecks, so I sure hope
that they have a pulse.
Okay. Unless it's a Day of the Dead.
You know what? Actually,
but that's in Mexico.
A big celebration down here, so that might be actually a good one for you to come down.
Do you do that there, even though it's a Mexican thing?
Yeah, Dia de los Muertos, Day of the Dead, is really big down here, festivals and big celebrations in some of the communities. The churches decorate quite extensively. It is really a sight to see.
Which just leaves me a question. I mean, I've done that in San Antonio. So in other words, San Antonio is not just the only place to go.
Texas. Absolutely not. I think actually we pride ourselves as being a better destination overall for tourism than San Antonio. We have friendlier people, better food, much more culture, and definitely much nicer wildlife destinations. Not taking away anything away from San Antonio. It's a beautiful town. But the valley is truly a gem, and it deserves to be discovered.
Well, I have to tell you, in terms of the food, I don't think I'll get better Mexican food after going to Coco's.
Coco's is definitely one of the local favorites. There's a few other ones that have food that I believe can rival them.
Really?
Definitely if you're looking to be on a trip, to be on a diet, we're probably not the destination.
Yeah.
But if you're looking to have a great time, enjoy some beautiful food, meet some interesting people, and just spend every day smiling from year to year, then we're the place to be.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for talking with me and my audience and getting into my business about what I'm getting from UPS or not getting.
No problem. Our pleasure. Thank you for having us. We really appreciate it.
Okay. Have a great day. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Okay. Yes, that was pretty cool. Look at that. In the middle of all this, UPS comes. And which, as I said, I wasn't... it wasn't from UPS that I wanted something. Wow, you know, that was a pretty small... Okay. Anyhow. Okay. Back to this. Well, it's time. It's definitely time for a commercial.
Thank you for calling JetBlue. May I help you?
My cousin was telling me you guys have extra leg room.
Uh-huh. We have extra leg room as compared to a normal coach seat.
Okay. If I don't have an extra leg, can I use that room for something else?
No. That is not what the extra leg implies. We took out one whole row of seats, and that gave the rest of those rows a couple of extra inches of leg room.
Ah.
I understand what you mean. The words extra leg imply that, but It has nothing to do with having an extra leg.
I'm a pretty literal person.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be taking it very literally.
I guess a little too literally.
Okay. Is there anything else I can help you with?
I think that's it. You've been pretty helpful.
Thanks for calling JetBlue.
Dear traveler, stretch out. We now have the most legroom in coach. Visit us at JetBlue.com. Sincerely, JetBlue. Based on average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines.
Oh, yes, JetBlue. As a matter of fact, I'll be JetBluing to Fort Lauderdale next month. That's pretty cool. So let's see. While I'm waiting, we're waiting for our other caller to call in. Let's get a little music here.
We start to look at one another short of breath, walking proudly in our winter coats, wearing smells from laboratories, facing a dying nation of moving paper fantasy, listening for the new toll lies with supreme visions of lonely tunes. Somewhere inside something there is a rush of greatness, who knows what stands in front of our lives. I fashion my
Let the sun shine. Yes, let that sun shine. Hi, let's see. Yep, I'm back. Okay. I'm back, and we're waiting for the sunshine. Actually, we're waiting for me to catch my breath. While I was playing the song, my neighbor brought my groceries, and I was in quickly trying to put whatever had to get into the refrigerator away. And I had her pick up food at my favorite restaurant in my neighborhood, Filipino restaurant called Mama Mina's Family Restaurant. And it's like, how should I describe the food? I'll tell you what, I got this thing called arroz caldo, which is not, it's not Spanish, but that's just how it comes out. I believe that the Philippines were formerly owned by Spain. So it's part Spanish, Asian, kind of, they speak English though. Anyway, so the arroz caldo is, so it's like a rice soup, and there's pieces of chicken, but this place uses fresh killed chicken that they put in there. So there's pieces of chicken, and it's on the bone, And then there's slices of ginger in it, and it's topped with slices of hard-boiled egg, scallions, and usually fried garlic, but I'm not a garlic eater. So that's one of the dishes I got. So it's basically a lot of the dishes I picked up, I requested, or things with a lot of veggies. I was in the mood for veggies today. I'm going to veg out. So let's see. So I had been talking about, I will have Coco's. I will have someone from Coco's on the radio show, perhaps like next week, I think. I want to get into the discussion of kind of like the difference between Mexican and Tex-Mex, and what would be considered Mexican. I'll tell you some of the other places. Oh, that's interesting. I also have on. So Coco's was the Mexican restaurant. Yoko's was a Japanese restaurant that was big on sushi. And the owners are Mexican. Get that. So you're going to a sushi restaurant, and they're Mexican people that own and the waiters, et cetera, which is, so it's like very unexpected. But the reality is, as long as the chef has to master learning sushi, how to make sushi, it really doesn't matter what the country he's from. And most likely if you're going to a Japanese restaurant in the United States, it's not owned by Japanese people anyway. It's just not. Anyway, and the other place that I will have on the radio show is the city of Hidalgo, and which is, I think, really close to the border of Mexico. And let's see what else I did in McAllen. I had dinner at I had Italian food when I got there. A place called Mamma Mia's. Food wasn't bad. It just, wasn't anything to write home about. I mean, I'm from New York, and Italian food is I more expected, you know, well, you know, I can easily cook Italian food, so I want something really good. But they, but their big thing really was pizza. And let's see, where else? Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, we're going to have the, oh, I went to Frida's Spa. Okay, I definitely got to have somebody from there. And this is Frida, F-R-I-D-A, Frida, as in the movie. They just dedicated it to her. And we'll get somebody from there because I want to talk about not only the massage, but this whole thing with the foot detox. Then there was also a place, Bell's Farm to Market, Bobby Bell. And the discussion I want to have is, like, this is a place. Now, I know they probably, like, have some kind of catalog or maybe just online, but it's like, how does this differ from if you buy from, let's say, a place like Harry and David or some of the places that specialize, like, in fruit? Now, I really want that, some of that grapefruit. I got to find out about that grapefruit. I really do. Let's see. So, don't know what's happening with what was the place? The Mazatlan, the Quinta Mazatlan. Thought that they'd be calling, and I told them, let's see, it's 4:46 on my time. I said 2:30 to 4:30. I said to call at, wait, let's try this again. I said to call at 2:30 to 4:30. I said if they call at 4, that means they're calling at 5. Okay. So I think, all right, so it's like in about like 10 minutes that they're going to call. And I just got this premium thing for Blog Talk Radio. I'm not utilizing it yet because I understand I can really upload a lot of stuff, and I really haven't had the opportunity yet to upload a whole bunch of, like, other music and cut out some of the old interviews that I had. But this should be pretty cool. I'm not sure what, like, I can Skype to Skype. I'm not, that I got to find out as to if I, how I do this with Skype to call, or I guess, I don't know if I'm calling somebody else that has Skype, and then I get to listen to it. Well, Barbara was on a little while ago, and I guess I could have asked her then, but I guess she had to depart because I don't see that she's on. Let's see. Let's go. See, this, we got a chat session. A chat session here. Please wait while we create your chat room. It's loading. It's connecting. Let's see. Loading language. Enter room. Welcome to my chat room. Okay. Well, I'll just take a look and see if anybody wants to chat with me. And back to you. Okay. So, really a shame that I only have that. So, let's see. So, tell you, then I also have, oh, aside from McAllen, right, because I still want to, we're still going to be talking about when I went to Waco. Just basically, let's see, the and in no order, I guess, because I don't, really not sure. When I went to McAllen, yes, I was wonderfully, I was just escorted most of the time by Nancy Millar, from the Chamber of Commerce or the CVB, whatever, I forgot what they call it. I always get those things mixed up. And for the day when I went to all the birding stuff and that, it was by Teo Rojas. And then when I went, no, I went to Waco first. And when I went to Waco, Lori Kasparian was escorting me around. She was from that Chamber of Commerce. And I'll just kind of basically tell you in Waco. Oh yes. Waco Airport. Yeah, this is okay. Now, so you understand what I'm talking about. You know, when you put your stuff, when you're going through the airport and you put your stuff on the roller and the belt and whatever thing, and it goes through the X-ray machine. Okay. Well, at Waco, as opposed to this X-ray machine, they have this thing that looks like an MRI machine. I swear to God, it looks like an MRI machine. And I was really kind of wondering about it. I didn't know whether they were putting people through it or not. And from what I understand, there's like supposed to be only three of these. If you want to see a photo of what I'm talking about, I have an article in the Queens Times this week. If you go to www.queenstimes.com, you could see in this week's paper, today's paper, which is 12/30/2010, what this thing looks like. Well, I said, what's the, you know, thing? Here's interesting. Okay, so somebody's now calling me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have to, you're going to have to listen to the same while I put you on hold a second. Are you ready for this? Here we go again. Thanks, all.
We starve, look at one another, short of breath, walking proudly in our winter coats, wearing smells from laboratories, facing a dying nation of moon.
It's one of those, I don't know, whether it's marketing, they ask someone a name, I say, what is this about, you know, and whatever, they don't want to answer. God, this is such bull crap with these, with phone calls, or I get one of them that's like they ring twice, okay, and it's from Georgia, and I'm going to start writing for phone numbers to tell you guys, but they ring twice, and I have some credit card coming from credit union, some credit something, and this is a thing that they do. And even if you pick up the phone, they won't. They'll hang up after the second ring. If you try to call them back, you don't get anything. They don't tell you who you are. I don't know. It gets to be absurd. That's why we have caller ID. But while I'm on doing my radio show, I don't get like a double caller ID. It's, you know what I mean? Like if I'm already using the phone, I don't get that. Anyway, all right. So let's get back to talking about Goody. Okay, Goody stuff. So anyway, so that was I went to dinner at a place called Diamondback's Restaurant to have steak. And let's see what else. I'm definitely going to have Uncle Dan's barbecue. He'll be on like maybe next week, I believe, because he's going to send me some of the barbecue stuff. Oh, it's so great. I don't know how I'm going to have barbecue after this, because it's like, you know, that really topped it. And we're going to talk about that and their, what they call the white potato salad, which I got to make a batch of, too. And then I went on a tour of the Texas Ranger Hall of Fame and Museum, and no, I did not see Texas Ranger Walker there. But I did see a whole bunch of stuff from the past, present, and there are actually three female Texas Rangers right now. Yeah. We also went to the tour of Cameron Park Zoo. And I'll have somebody from there coming on the radio. That was cool. That's like a nice size zoo. Not huge, it's not tiny, but enough like animals, as I say as a child. But there were no rubber chickens. I only had just two rubber chickens showed up. That was it. And then I'm definitely going to have, next week, yeah. Homestead Heritage. I'm devoting almost the entire show to this place. Rather than give you a whole description of the whole thing, just think of it as one of those living museums where they dress up. It's not a museum. It's like in present day right now, and they're just doing, you know, all the crafts and living on the land and whatever kind of thing, off the land. I mean. Okay, and let's see. Then we got the tour. I went on a tour of the Armstrong Browning Library, which has to do with Elizabeth and Robert Browning. And I went to the Waco Mammoth site. Yes, they're real mammoths that they had found. And you can, in the area where you can see, set up, you can see the bones. I went to the Dr. Pepper Museum and made my own soft drink. And that's kind of pretty much what I did in Waco. while I was in McAllen, where did I stay? McAllen, I stayed at the Drury Suites, not the Dreary, but the Drury, D-R-U-R-Y Suites. And that was pretty good. Let's see, did I have, I think it was a kitchen. Was there a kitchen? You know, my brain, I'm going brain dead already. Trying to picture what was there. I know what I liked about that. Yeah, I could do my own laundry. I was able to do laundry after, you know, like after like 3 or 4 days in one place. I like to be able to, you know, get my laundry done. So that was one of the things. I mean, the place was nice. It wasn't just that I could do my laundry. And I'll think in my brain, I'll picture it again. I'll try to picture the whole layout and everything. But I will definitely be talking a lot more about McAllen. And let's see. Went to the McAllen Creative Incubator, which is kind of like, it was a classroom, not a classroom, it was a school, an old former school, like an elementary school, I think. So the setup, there was the rooms that have things for, not all different types of artists. So artists rent a room as for their studio, and I guess they work there. I'm not sure whether they sell whatever they make, if they're making something there or not. We went to do some shopping near the Mexican border, and let's see. Did I say that was in, that was McAllen, not Waco. Did I say, this was in Waco? No, I didn't mean that. Okay. Here we go again. Okay. We're going to try this again. I'm going to just like play this a second, and while someone calls in to find out who's calling me. Hang on.
We
dress, walking proudly in our winter coats, wearing smells from laboratories, facing a die.
I know, you're probably glad anyway you don't have to hear the song again. That was a legitimate phone call. But now we're back to what we did, which was now Kita Mazatlan, and I believe I have Colleen Hook on the air.
Hello, Merle. This is Colleen.
Yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
So, I already had a whole conversation. We're talking about the Butterfly Park, the World Birding Center. So now that's why I wanted to talk about Quinta Mazatlan and first a historic home, and now how this differs as a nature center from if you went to the other two places. So let's start with the historic, the home itself.
Awesome. Well, we are one of the World Birding Centers, and each of the nine sites in the valley promotes a unique habitat and a unique experience. In Quinta Mazatlan, we call it an urban sanctuary. It is in the heart of McAllen. We're across the street from the airport and hotels, and there's this little green island. It's a protected thorn forest that was protected really with the first owners back in the 1930s. And the gentleman, Jason Matthews, made 100,000 adobe blocks. So it's a 10,000 square foot adobe home. It's one of the largest in Texas. And that sits in the middle of this forest. He protected this forest and lived here for 30 years. And then the second owner did the same thing. In the 1960s, at a time when people were mowing and blowing, and there's a country club next to us, and lots of development, the second owners also protected this remnant of a Tamaulipan thorns forest that really used to cover the valley in the 1800s. So, pretty unique story.
I think we were talking about this whole thing that he would sit on top of some.
Yeah, he made a little a hooch above the adobe made of sticks, a little shelter. He had a rope. He would pull the rope up. He wrote for the American Mercury magazine, the new edition. He wrote a couple poetry books, and he wrote Hollywood scripts. And in the 1930s, he frequented Mazatlan in Mexico, where John Wayne and those stars at that time hung out. And so we assume really that's where he got the vision for the architectural style of this home in South Texas, because it is pretty unique. And it is made of local materials. Well, when I say local, within 70 miles, Mexico is 10 miles away. We're right on the border. So you have beautiful Talavera and Satillo and Cantera and clay tile roof. It's quite spectacular. Everything in the house, you could say today, is green. If you were to build a greenhouse today, a LEED certified house, that's what Jason Matthews did in the 1930s. So they say really much about going green today is going back and doing things the way we did back then.
So can you, describe, the rooms in the house first, as we toured?
Well, you walk into, all the doors are beautiful dark wood, heavily carved with images, shells and cherubs and things of that sort. Beautiful tile archways, hand-painted tiles from Mexico. Of course, all the walls are the adobe, beautiful glass with some stained glass images in some of them. And the home is designed in a U shape, much like the homes in Mexico. where everything opens up onto this beautiful courtyard where the families gather, and the families still gather, and in the evenings we host weddings and lovely night events with the lights up in the palm trees. So it's quite tropical, and the weather is quite tropical. Today I believe it is 84 degrees, and so we have a lot of winter Texans walking the trails. We have a half a mile of trails that go around the historic adobe home. And we have a lot of birds that don't go any farther north than McAllen, the chachalaca and the green jay and the kiskadee and the buff-bellied hummingbird. And we call them common in the valley, but our visitors are coming to see the uncommon to them.
So, in other words, you would find a smaller variety than if you, let's say, went to the World Birding Center.
Yes, I think we're 20 acres, but it's all about connecting pearls on a necklace, and we're one of those pearls that these birds, whether migrating, you know, north for the winter or south for the spring, they're looking for little pieces of land to stop and refuel and rest. So even though it is small compared to some of the other centers that may have 1,700 acres, you do get quite a rich experience.
So they probably turn to each other and say, while you're flying, meet me for lunch.
Yeah,
meet me for lunch downtown in McAllen
at Quinta Mazatlan.
Meet me for lunch there. I have to meet a friend right now over at the butterfly park. He's like,
yeah,
got a little lost. He was supposed to go to the World Birding Center.
Well, your chickens were here, and
my chickens had a great time.
Met the Texas tortoise, which is a turtle native to North America, but really only is found in South Texas on to Mexico, and loves the fruit of the cactus, such as the prickly pear, and we have a lot of prickly pear around the property. They eat the tuna, as well as do people. You can buy the pads to the prickly pear and the tuna in our local grocery stores. So.
Oh, okay. the paintings, so the bird paintings.
The bird paintings, yes, we have an art gallery, and Daniel Adams has a new exhibit of trees and birds of South Texas. They're watercolor paintings. They're quite beautiful and spectacular, beautiful splash of color. The old master bedroom is now the art gallery, and so we change out shows and attract a lot of new people to the center to view the art and then go on the trails. We also have a gift store.
I noticed that Esther and Eunice were trying to pose.
Yes, they were also in the gift store. So how many countries have Esther and Eunice been to?
Oh, we haven't taken her out of the country yet.
Oh, we haven't.
Haven't taken them out of the country, no. I don't do too much traveling out of the States because there's still too many places in the United States I haven't visited yet. And so my brain goes, and I want to go to another country? I still haven't gotten done with this one yet. You know what I mean? So I'm not sure. I have gone, but I didn't take them. I have gone to Italy. I've gone to Italy and South Africa. Those are the two places that I have gone to. But Esther and Eunice, I know they want to go with me the next time I go out of the country. That's for sure.
That's cute.
So,
Quinta Mazatlan is unique in that it's a home and a habitat, and people will see beautiful, beautiful manicured gardens around the home, but then this forest as they step off the front lawn, and it's a great example of how we can live with our wild neighbors, meaning animals, birding habitat, birds and turtles and tortoises and other creatures. A lot of plant signage. Again, people go, oh, I'd love to attract a buff-bellied hummingbird. What do I do? You know, you plant the Turk's cap and you hang some feeders and you build that little piece of habitat, you know, outside your window at your home. So our goal really is to expand and encourage others to plant native habitat at their homes so they can experience this in their backyard.
So you just said something. So in other words, just putting up a bird feeder for, like, hummingbirds isn't enough? It's planting something, too?
It isn't enough. Hummingbirds actually eat spiders, and they use the spider web to help make their nest, and they need cover, and they need branches for resting and nesting. And so you need that little piece of habitat, whether it's planting one tree. For us, we always recommend the olive tree, the anacahuita. It's a small, beautiful tree. And then under that, plant Turk's cap and maybe some red yuccas. It doesn't take much, two or three plants, and you've designed a little piece of habitat. You're now providing water and, you know, shelter and a nesting location. And then the hummingbird feeder should only be an enhancement. Everything else should be, you know, 3/4 of what they need, and then the last 1/4 can be the enhancement of the hummingbird feeder. And unfortunately, you know, sometimes we forget to refill the hummingbird feeder, which, you know, you should at least clean once or twice a week. But if you have everything else, you're still helping them survive. If you've got the trees growing there and the plants growing there, you're really helping the wildlife versus a two-week hobby.
But here in New York City, I mean, if I did that, you know, necessarily wouldn't it get hummingbirds coming here if they're not here in the
right. Right.
If they're not
unless,
here in the first place, they're not going to...
Right. Unless
gonna,
you
like,
know of a migratory path that
yeah.
they're coming through. There are certain states that know that in October or November, you know, they're migrating south to the valley. And so some states put out hummingbird feeders maybe just for a month to help those birds with their, you know, their migration flight to the Gulf of Mexico and beyond.
So you don't think that the hummingbirds can get to Google Maps and find out where the bird feeders are located, I guess, huh?
Well, I think that's why we're so lucky in the valley. We are the Mississippi and the central pathways that these birds have been using forever. They're still using it. And so they come through the valley like clockwork. And one of our largest birding festivals is the first week of November. Thousands of birders come from around the world, and you get to go to all these neat nature centers and private ranches. But we know the 1st of November is the major influx of these birds that don't live here all year long that are migrating south.
Oh, okay.
So November's a great time, and then obviously the spring when all the migratory birds are headed back north, you know, March and April is our other peak month, you know, if you're really focused on birding.
Do you find, I had someone from the World Birding Center and the Butterfly Park on before, but do you, and I didn't ask them this question, do you find, like, artists who will come there just to sit and paint something? Like if they see, you know, some, you know, butterfly or bird or something like that, that they'll, you know, kind of trying to do some artwork?
We do. We're not quite Santa Fe, but we're starting to attract a lot of new artists, and we frequently see artists in the courtyard or out in the meadow or out in the thorn forest with one of the portable chairs illustrating and doing watercolors. A gentleman that actually did over 100 illustrations. We finally produced a book of his illustrations, and he was a winter Texan that came down to the valley, you know, in the winter. So, yeah, lots of unusual, pretty places to paint here at Quinta Mazatlan, specifically because of the adobe Spanish Revival style home with the different archways into the different, you know, gardens and meadows. So hope to attract more. We've been very lucky with the weather this year. It's been spectacular. Beautiful Christmas and beautiful week this week.
Rub it in. Rub it in while we have a blizzard here.
Yeah, I know. Well, sun is our strength. That's why we're called the tropics.
Okay.
it's a weakness in the summer, but in the fall and spring, it's a strength. So.
And so you said you have a gift shop as well.
Yeah, we're just trying to promote local artists. We have a lot of people that mesquite is the dominant tree in our forest. And so there are a lot of people who carve cheese cutting boards and Christmas ornaments out of mesquite. The mesquite flower also is great to cook with. We have a lady that makes soap
from... Now, you mean
from
mesquite flower, F-L-O-W-E-R, F-L-O-U-R?
Yes. Yes. You put
Which
it out.
Which one?
F-L-O-U-R.
Oh, okay. We
use it in breads and cookies and pancakes, and it adds a real smoky wood flavor. And it's
mm-hmm.
supposed to be very healthy for you as well. We sell a lot of aloe vera products. Aloe vera does very well in the valley because of the heat. A lot of homemade soaps made with prickly pear and aloe vera, tuna and some of our other native plants. So try to specialize in items that you couldn't walk into a big box store and find and would make a nice gift for those headed home.
Oh, that's cool. I guess I'm so busy with other things I didn't really notice.
We were busy showing the chickens around, I think.
Yeah. But they did make friends with the tortoises, though.
They did. They
evidently.
Did.
Yeah, they were really happy to get their picture taken with them. Did you see it? Yes.
No, I haven't. I haven't visited the site yet. That'll be next.
Oh, you must see it.
what do people say at the airport?
So far, you know, no one is. I've been waiting for people to comment at the airport.
Right.
And, you know, going through security or whatever. No one says a word. No one even comments about the rubber chicken. They will while I have it on the plane. People will, you know,
sitting next to you.
Come up to me or they'll come in and say, what's with the rubber chickens? And I basically tell them I'm a journalist with a sense of humor. That's my first thing. Get out of my mouth, and then I'll explain that they're from the rubber chicken. Then I just look at it. Oh, well, they're from the rubber chicken forest in California. And that's there. And then I tell them it's a Twisted Oak Winery, and then I continue a little bit.
They're intrigued.
You know?
Yeah. You're drawing
intrigued.
Them in.
Listen, I mean, after all, you got
life's too short
not
to have fun. Right.
I mean, a 61-year-old woman dragging around two rubber chickens, you kind of wonder if I'm off my rocker. You know what I mean? But until you get that this is for real and I have a sense of humor, that's...
I'm sure it opens up conversation a lot.
Oh, it does. It's so much fun. And you must have fun there. You must have fun at the thing that the... Quinta Mazatlan, huh?
Well, just the walkway up again, you know, you're coming from cement in walking up Bougainvillea Lane, you know, and the Chachalacas welcome you and you just take a deep sigh of relief and relax and yes, it's very wonderful, and we do a lot of environmental education. We have contracts with the local school districts where all the third graders and the eighth graders and then other age groups come out. And for many, it's their first time stepping into any kind of a forest. And, you know, for them, it's Disney World. And they're the future generation. They're the next voters. And if they don't have a connection with something outdoors, they're not going to be voting for green space, you know, whether it's painting outdoors or doing poetry outdoors or birding or walking or hiking, some connection with the great outdoors. And most of the children today are being raised in an urban setting. I think it's 85% you know, so that connection is not there presently.
Yeah.
So
unless
and that's
yeah.
Yeah, that's our mission. I mean, so and it's very enjoyable. Children just leave, and we give the children a free coupon to come back and bring their family. And when they come back, yeah, they're the tour guides, and they're showing their abuelitas and their family members Quinta Mazatlán. And so that's really rewarding when the children bring back the adults. That means
now,
we did a good job.
What's the charge for this, or is there?
It's $2 for adults and $1 for children and senior citizens. It is part of the City of McAllen Parks and Recreation Department, so we try to keep it very reasonable. And we're able to keep the facility open and continue to enhance it via our evening rentals for weddings and night events. And then obviously we have a wonderful board of director that does fundraisers. We're working on another 4 acres that will have a wetlands and expanded trails and some palapas for sitting and just enjoying the nature. So that's the next phase of the facility we're looking forward to working on.
That's great. Well, I appreciate having you on and chatting about the Kings of Mazatlán. Now the next thing I get to do, well, is now that my chickens are blogged, my second step is I have to do my blog, and then I'll start getting this into publications.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate it so much, Merle, and it was fun meeting you and your chickens, and thanks for the opportunity.
Sure.
All righty.
Have a happy new year.
You too. Have a safe and happy new year. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Yep. So that was that's how we did differ. So it's a nature center, and you still get to see birdies, et cetera, et cetera. And so, I don't know what's coming up on this here. Anyhow, well, it's not that, like, I have 8 minutes left. And I'm going to end the show, like, early. This page, the page, blah, 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 com says, I don't know. Anyway, that weird stuff on my computer. I'm getting a new computer anyway. So, everybody, next week, again, I might have wind up with, like, 2 shows. Everybody, like, if you're listening before the new year, have a happy new year. If you listen to this after the new year, I hope you had a good New Year's Eve. If you drink, have one for me. But don't, of course, drink and drive me crazy. So, till next time. Where are they? Oh, I'm sorry. Someone wants to say hello. All right, what can you do? All right, wait, the other one? Yeah, okay. They sound alike because they're sisters, that's why. So in case wondering why, you know, they both sounded the same. So that was hello, goodbye, and I think they said Happy New Year as well. So until next time.